Hi, I'm Dr. Elizabeth Sanders, a foot and ankle surgeon and assistant professor at Boston University Medical Center.
Hi, I'm Katrina Sanders. I'm a registered dental hygienist, consultant, international speaker, and wine lover.
And we're sisters. I grew up looking up to my big sister, Katrina.
And now I look up to my lady boss, physician sister, Elizabeth.
Together, we are working to unite the dental and medical communities in unique and exciting ways.
Welcome to Floss and Flip Flops with the Sanders Sisters, our monthly podcast,
where we unpack all things health related from your mouth to your toes.
So grab your flossy flops
and slide on some flippy floppies.
And let's get on with the show. Hello, hello, and welcome back to another episode of Floss and Flip Flops with your favorite ginger sisters, the Sanders Sisters. Hello, Dr. Sanders. Happy October.
Happy October. Are you so excited for your favorite month?
Well,
this is like the month you look forward to all year.
Yes, yes. If you walk through the Hallmark aisle, yes, that's right. National Dental Hygiene Appreciation Month. Can you believe it? We only get one month to appreciate all of the amazing things that dental hygienists do. We should be appreciated 365 days of the year. But in October, thank you. I feel the appreciation. I appreciate your appreciation. And I'm so excited because today we're going to be talking about really the full landscape of appreciating hygienists and what that looks like from a career standpoint. And I think that's important because for us to fully appreciate what the profession is of dental hygiene, we're not an industry, we're a profession. To appreciate the profession of dental hygiene, we have to appreciate that what we have is a career, not a job, not a trade, but a career. And I think that has been in my experience as a dental hygienist, graduating in 2007 to where we are today. That's one of the biggest leaps that I've seen is hygienists really stepping into this space of, this is my career. And there are a zillion different ways that you can appreciate what that career looks like. And we've had tons of hygienists on and we've interviewed them throughout the years here on the pod. Today, I'm bringing one of my dearest friends in the whole wide world to the pod because I think he's going to give us an amazing insight and a very unique approach to appreciating the career path of a dental hygienist. And that is my bestie, the amazing Mr. Joe Fogg of OnDM. Yes. Joe, welcome to the pod.
Welcome.
Wow. What a great introduction. I feel like I gotta live up to that.
Oh, you do. Live it day in and day out, my friend. But you live it.
You hit the nail on the head as far as the profession. It's not a job.
Yeah.
So I love how you teed it all up.
Well, thank you. So I want to give you a little bit of a behind the scenes about where this came from. So I was a couple months back, I'm sitting in San Antonio and I'm talking to a dental hygienist. And we were talking about how in the state of Texas, they had just passed dental hygienists being able to do injections. And I was asking, you know, how do hygienists in the state of Texas feel about, you know, receiving injections? And this hygienist said, you know, it's mixed. Because some hygienists are really excited. We finally did it. You know, we've been trying to pass this. And a lot of times we look at legislation as one benchmark or milestone for our profession, our career, where we're able to go. And yet inside of the hygienists who wanted this to pass, you also had a group of hygienists who were a bit disappointed because there were some other red tape pieces that were kind of placed around that legislation. Things like you can only perform infiltration, you can't do, you know, full blocks. And is that safe for a patient to just get infiltrations and all these things? So then you had the other side of those hygienists. But then she says, now we've got this other group of hygienists who honestly have no interest in learning a new skill. And when this got passed, it was, well, now I don't want to have to be responsible for learning to do injections. That's not something I want to do. So she's sitting here because she's this hygienist who I was speaking to is very involved in her local and state components. And she's spending a lot of time trying to advocate for hygienists stepping into this. And she says it's really kind of challenging because how a hygienist shows up in his or her profession, how seriously you take showing up on time, how seriously you take putting on those scrubs and representing yourself and representing the practice, how seriously you take the core values of that practice. I mean, all of those things really influence how doctors see hygienists. We'll work with hygienists. I work with doctors all the time as a hygienist. And, you know, I have doctors who will openly admit, like, Katrina, you might know more about the dental profession and the provision of dentistry than I do, which is a really amazing thing for a doctor to say. But it's also because I take this very seriously and I'm investing a lot of time and energy and education into this. And then we have the other side of things where maybe some of our doctors are interacting with hygienists who maybe see this as not a profession, but more as a job, a thing you just do. So I want to start by getting real provocative, Joe, because I know you're out there and you are truly a master of analytics in understanding you, like the amount of data you know and how you're aggregating it and looking at the landscape of hygienists, hygiene associations, hygiene and doctors working together, the shortage. I mean, are you seeing this? Are you seeing some of this?
I mean, I'll thank you. So one thing is, like you said, Texas, right? In that state, if I had to make a bet on which state is going to let dental assistants do scaling and everything else, I'd bet Texas. And how terrible is that? When you think of what, remember what we were navigating last year in the state of Colorado, when Colorado, in the dental practices and the dental association, maybe not the dental association of Colorado, but the actual, they're looking for ways to solve this challenge of the workforce. And they don't want to do it by allowing clinicians to get more hours to get benefits. Because if you look at, I'm going to add a couple of different things, right?
You mentioned Let's go there.
But at the end of 2022, the Health Policy Institute, the ADA, the ADHA, and Danby did a workforce shortage issue, kind of like a state of the union, what's happening. It came out that 80% of all private practices don't offer healthcare benefits to their clinicians.
Okay, so 80%. That is the vast majority of hygienists.
Yeah,
this is their profession, their career.
Well, and it changes too, right? Dental insurance versus medical insurance too.
They didn't even provide medical, and the reason is because if you have less than 50 employees per the Affordable Care Act, and they don't average 30 hours a week over a course of 4.5 weeks, you don't have to give them benefits. So over decades, it's been part-time employees because maybe they weren't open on Fridays or Mondays or what have you. So when you ask a hygienist if she works full-time, she'll say yes. And you want to say, okay, is it 2 days in one practice and 2 days in another practice? Or is it a DSO? Because the practice market is that way. It's the largest workforce of healthcare providers that don't have healthcare. Okay, so
Wait, we got to say this again. Say that sentence one more time. Dental professionals are the largest healthcare
workforce that isn't offered healthcare insurance.
Yeah, I believe that. Unbelievable.
So then what happens is, okay, so now you have this part-time fragmented workforce. So is it there are workforce shortages or is there just a shortage of practices willing to extend them full-time work? So what happens is if you take one practice, wherever market you're in, and you draw, a 10-mile radius around it, 80% of those practices have clinicians working part-time. So now you have the average graduate and they're coming out of school. Guess what? You take a guess at what's the average age people are getting married for their first marriage right now.
Oh gosh, I'm a terrible statistic on that.
30. Okay, so you're graduating dental school. And as you're graduating dental school, you're no longer on your parents' plan. Mm-hmm. And you're married to he or she. You're typically, maybe they get it from their spouse. Now you have this workforce. I guarantee you, I had no idea how hard hygienists work every single day. to think that they do that every single day. I mean, I hear ladies wearing compression socks because they're on their feet all day and all these things, and yet you don't even give them benefits, and you're wondering why they're not going to be loyal to you. Okay, so then to go back to the state of Texas, and why I say the state of Texas, right? And no offense to hygienists in the state of Texas, but we all know that there is, when you think of exploiting labor, right? When you're going to exploit labor, you're going to try to pay them as little as possible and give them as little benefits as possible, which means you want to pay them as 1099. You don't want to pay their employer social. Oh, we got a thumbs up.
Yeah, no, I was like that. Yeah.
You don't want to pay their
social. We don't want to thumbs up 1099, Joe. Come on.
Yeah, sorry about that. So you don't want to give them social security tax. You don't want to pay the Medicare tax. You don't want to give them any benefits. You don't want to give them workers' comp or the ability for unemployment, all these different things. So now your labor cost comes down. Now, as you know, in every single state, when they pass their state dental bar exam, their board exam, it specifically says they got to work under direction and control or direct supervision. Okay, so the number one rule for the Department of Labor, every single state and federally, as well as the IRS, is if you have to work under direction and control or direct supervision, you cannot be paid as an independent contractor, regardless, one shift or 1,000 shifts. It doesn't matter. Okay, so now what happens is you have a dentist can, except in the state of California. Okay, so what happens now is you look at it and you say, okay, in this marketplace, I need to fill in additional staff. You have all these different Facebook groups where office managers live in to find people. You have these matching apps where you try to match people up. They pay you as 1099 contractor. They say, we have nothing to do with the payment of it. We're just doing a matching. So you have all of these hygienists now, whether it's through Facebook group is the number one source that office manager will find people. They bring that person in. There's no way they're going to add them for payroll to do I-9s, W-4s, and everything else to pay that. So now they're taking a check as a 1099. So if you look at that, when it comes to these state laws being passed, right, a lot of states, they'll look to see if hygienists can have an independent practice, right? So if you want to have an independent practice, they want that. They want to have some of that autonomy, right?
Sure, sure.
While at the same time, who prevents them in any given market? Who presents the hygienist for if that goes to legislation? Who prevents that and blocks that from happening?
Usually the dental board, the doctors, and the lobbyists, right?
The dental practices. So the dental practices and the doctors, they're voting against to allow hygienists to have more autonomy to be independent. Yet at the same time, they're paying you as an independent contractor. So they can't have it both ways.
I'm so confused. Okay, so you're telling me I graduate from hygiene school, I have to work under direct supervision. So because I have to work, I am legally required to work under the direct supervision of a doctor. So I'm not an independent contractor.
No.
Yet they want to pay me as an independent contractor because then they don't have all of the other added fees. So they tell me, Katrina, don't you worry about it. We're just going to do this 1099 thing and look at this giant paycheck you're going to get because we didn't take any taxes out. Have a blasty blast. And then April 15th rolls around. And now what happens to Katrina RDH?
Oh my God. We get all the time people on April 15th, they didn't know. I mean, yeah. About 2 years ago, Uber, Lyft, TaskRabbit, and Postmates were all sued in the state of California, but they were going to put a stop to it because all of those gig workers that were 1099, they got hammered with massive tax bills, and they didn't really know how to save their money and apply it or what they could write off. And so there's all these misconceptions, and let alone they don't even work under direct supervision.
You're an Uber driver.
Massachusetts, Illinois, all of these states have been massive lawsuits against all that. So I think there's probably half of practices that kind of know, right? It's not legal, but they're in a hurry. They're trying to get it. None of them have HR unless they're a DSO. They don't have in-house HR. They don't have in-house CPAs or CFOs for controllers, right? They outsource payroll. So the office manager, pretty knowledgeable of things, but it's not like they're onboarding new employees every single day. So they don't have a ready I-9 form and a state W-4 and a federal W-4 and a direct deposit form. Very easy for this one person that's going to come in just to give them a check.
Yeah.
Hope nothing happens.
So this is really unbelievable. Let's way back play back this because that, this occurs. I mean, there are people listening to this, probably driving to their temp shift right now, like, oh my gosh, Joe, I'm going to at 100% just get a flat rate check and hope that it's under what, $600, hope that it's under $600 so that I don't have to worry about, you know, whatever the tax thing is, I'm going to come in at a 1099. Here we go. They're driving to work. This is unbelievable. The concept here being that when we talk about the classification of a profession, and again, we're here to talk about like hygienists, like stepping into this career, yet here we are in this space where we've almost been backed into a corner, it kind of seems like, where now we don't have full understanding of how to protect ourselves. Because what, let's pretend that I'm a 1099. Let's pretend I do a 1099, I go into the office, right? Okay, blah, 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 I'm here, 1099, and something happens with a patient.
Actually, let me tell you this story. So this was a couple months ago. There was a hygienist fresh out of graduation. She, which they should do, they should, the great thing about on DM or another service is you get to try out other practices.
Heck yeah. It's like dating, right? Yeah, like, I didn't just like marry my husband. I was like, no, you need to wine and dine me, right? I want to date all around and see what's going on. Wait, that's 100%. For another podcast, Joe.
So within this particular individual, she temped 4 days at a dental practice. Each day it was $50 an hour, 8 hours, it was $400 a day. Shift one, shift two, shift three, shift four. The second to the last patient, she rolls her ankle, falls on the patient, drops her Cavitron handpiece.
Oh no.
Legit, goes to the urgent care clinic, no health insurance, right?
Right.
She goes to them, she says to the practice, so she's owed $1,600. Can you please approve my 4 time cards? Because I need the money because I have a pretty, you know, it's a pretty big urgent care clinic. They said, you actually dropped a $5,000 handpiece. We're going to deduct that from the $1,600. You actually owe us $3,400. She goes, no way. It was an accident. No.
Yeah.
Luckily, the patient was okay. The patient was like a 16 or 17 year old kid. He was fine.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah. Okay. Kids like, you okay down there? Fine. Yeah.
She wasn't. She had an urgent care clinic. They weren't going to approve the time card. She calls the matching platform that connected them and says, hey, the practice isn't approving my time cards. Can you please approve them? They said, sorry, that's not our agreement. You agreed to our terms and conditions. Our terms and conditions simply say, we just match people up for the shift. And if they don't pay you, we'll look into it to see if they can utilize our services in the future. Unfortunately, we can't help you and they're really not at fault. We wish you the best of luck.
Wow.
Well, she's not covered under workers' comp because she's 1099. She's not covered under unemployment. She can't work because she's 1099. Any insurance that she have would not cover the cost of that broken handpiece. And she has no liability insurance to go after the practice. Not crazy. It's just worker
expectation. It's unbelievable. It's really, yeah.
Happens all the time. You talked when you spoke at Colorado. Imagine if the patient got hurt.
That's right.
Yes.
That's right.
Then the first thing they're going to do is there's a good chance the practice isn't even covered because they're negligent against the state's Dental Practice Act to where they paid that person under direction. That person was working under the direction of their control.
Yeah.
Not independent.
Yeah.
So they do what's called an audit of who had wet hands that day that interacted with the patient. It's just, but nobody knows. They're flying out there blind.
That blows my mind. So these doctors want to control the autonomy of what a hygienist is able to do by saying you need to work under direct supervision. However, if you come in as a temp and you're a 1099, technically, if something happens, you did something, and there's a patient complication of any kind, now that no longer fully falls underneath the license of the doctor. That now is also going to create issues for the hygienist because you were technically classified as a 1099. And there are issues there too, because I know how many times do people end up being brought to the board, even though the issue or incident didn't occur on the day that you were treating the patient, you were one of those treating clinicians, right? And so that creates an issue too. Hygienists, how many times do you go in for a shift you're working with a doctor that you work side by side with and you disagree on perio treatment and you know, oh my gosh, you know, what is that going to mean legally for me or for my license? If you're working as a W-2, you're classified underneath that doctor's license, right? You're classified as I'm working under the direct supervision or at least general supervision of a doctor. And this is the working arrangement that we have. Legally, I can't diagnose this case, et cetera. But what happens if you're 1099 and now you are the independent contractor? They are coming after you. That's what's so crazy.
Yeah. I mean, in that scenario, they're both going to be named in the law.
Of course. Of course. They'll be named in it.
But then that person's, the hygienist is completely on their own. So the reason I connect that to Texas was this is, if that's a state where it happens pretty at a high velocity, it's the same. So if hygienists are willing to do that as a 1099, there's a high probability that they're also not participating in the Texas Dental Hygiene Association and the ADHA. So if they're not participating in the association, that means the Texas Dental Hygiene Association, they're not building any coffers of any dollars to hire lobbyists to then advocate for them for better protection. It goes full circle. And a lot of people don't connect those dots. So if you look at which states may have the least amount of memberships, I think Texas is probably pretty, if you look at the number of hygienists compared to the number of memberships in that market. I would see what happened in Colorado, especially if the shortage gets heavier. It's in a state, right? Okay, that's happening at a high velocity. So you think if you want to change it from a career to a job really fast, you allow other dental professionals that aren't hygienists to be able to do the work you're doing.
And it's probably not a standard protocol for a dental hygienist to have malpractice or liability insurance. I'm sure it's offered, but it's probably very, very expensive and just a difficult thing to obtain.
Listen, there's another state. This is in Massachusetts, for example. So in Massachusetts, what happened is the 1099 platforms got sued by the Massachusetts Attorney General. They got kicked out. Now,
they got sued by the Attorney General?
Yeah, 2019, 1099 apps, and it happened again just recently. And so there's other states as well, too. So what happens, it's because it's labor exploitation. They're not covered on workers' comp, unemployment, disability, none of those things. All right, so what happens is, in particular, I lost my train of thought. Okay, so we were talking about
Massachusetts.
Okay, all right, so in that, with all of that happening, they made it so that they were protected by those workers. So in there, as they're promoting to be able to sign up to the membership so that way they can advocate. So because you have to build the for the legislation to be able to advocate for them. If they don't have that, then they're just kind of sitting out there on an island. And I think in Colorado, again, I think it happened to Montana. They were faced against it. We know Minnesota just went faced.
Montana was, yeah. Mm-hmm. No, so let's talk about Colorado. So what Joe's talking about for our listeners, what Joe's talking about is that in Colorado, what was this, a year ago, 2 years ago, maybe? They kind of were in the kibitzing of a house bill that would permit dental assistants to, for lack of a better term, and I'm going to butcher this, but for lack of a better term, dental assistants would be able to take a shortened, like a weekend course of sorts, and be able to subgingivally probe and subgingivally scale patients. And the citation or the reason why they were doing this is the call out of the shortage of dental hygienists. One thing that you said earlier, Joe, that I absolutely love is really the big question that we should be asking ourselves is there a shortage of dental hygienists, or is there a shortage of appreciation of dental hygienists? And, you know, when we talk about this exploitation of the workforce, and you've got this kind of, there's a tearing right now because you have dental hygienists who really do take their job seriously. And by job, I mean their careers. They take this seriously. I have these letters after my name. This matters to me. I worked very hard for this degree. I worked very hard through all of these boards exams. I'm advocating for, we interview people all the time on our podcast. I'm advocating for, they're doing things. They're working in nursing homes. We interviewed Sonia Dunbar. Like, they're working in nursing homes. They're giving immunizations. They're working in Alzheimer's clinics. They're doing airway evaluation. Like, these are hygienists who are the cream of the crop, elite providers who take this work so seriously. And we show up into a clinical practice and we're told, this is what we're willing to give you. And my goodness, that is such a hard piece to swallow, because then you do feel as though you lack some control over the breadth or the depth of what you truly can do with the skills that you've been building. You know, I'm a dental hygienist in the state of Arizona, where we passed dental hygienists being able to deliver Botox. But even there, we're starting to see this kind of push-pull back and forth where nobody really fully understands, can we do it? Can we not do it? Who needs to be in the building if we do it? And what does that look like? And all of these different things, which is just so silly, because Elizabeth says this all the time. You take a look at like who really knows head and neck anatomy, like a dental hygienist who's got to take head and neck anatomy class, like, hello. It's just, it's so weird when you look at all of these little nuances, but it really does then create an issue, particularly for the hygienists who show up with strength and say, I take my work extremely seriously. And so now here we are, where we're proposing the concept of dental assistants probing and subgingively scaling our patients, which really feels as though all of this work that I've done in my training to take my board, I had to take a boards. I had to pay thousands of dollars and have a live patient, whether we believe that's ethical or not. I'd have a live patient sit in a chair for hours while I had pit stains down to here, trying to scale a patient, remove the whatever number of chunks of calculus I had to. So some adjudicator from a testing facility could identify, yes, in fact, Katrina Sanders knows how to scale teeth. And you're telling me that all of that I worked for really could be just whittled down to, let's have a dental assistant take a weekend course. So the issue in Colorado is that the hygienists who are upset about this, and this is what's so crazy. I did an Instagram post on this and I said, hey, I'm on a flight right now. Let's pretend that there's a shortage of pilots and the, you know, flight attendants, like, cool. Like, I'm just going to fly this jet today. I took a weekend course. Like, would you like get on that plane and be like, cool, like, here we go. You know, I guess it depends if it's a Boeing or not. Right. We're not sponsored by Boeing, everybody. But what I mean to say is you wouldn't do that. It doesn't make sense. And the questions that I asked the dental community in this post was, what concerns you the most about this? And I will tell you, the assumption was, oh, Colorado hygienists are going to be upset, that they're going to be like kicked out of the workforce, that they're going to be, you know, invalidated, that there's going to be no need for them, that doctors are just going to hire assistants like crazy, and they're going to do the cheapest option. And you know what was so beautiful about this is that Colorado hygienist commented left and right on this post. He said, I'm a Colorado hygienist. I'm licensed in the state of Colorado. My biggest concern is the health of my patients. What happens when somebody who does not have the level and caliber of training I do now steps in and doesn't advocate for the patient and say, respectfully, doctor, this patient is a stage 2 periodontitis. We do need to do scaling and root planing on this case. I'm co-diagnosing alongside you. We need to be advocating for health. Isn't that what these initiatives should be about, is the health of the community. And we got so blindsided by that, right?
Yeah, I know. I love how you said all that. And in theory, that's what would matter, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's
what was pushed on the other side was not that.
That's right.
How do we get hygiene rates that are higher and lower? And how do we get more labor force to be able to do this at a lower rate? So I'm gonna do a parallel question, which is why I said Texas would be first. What state is the state that uses the most 1099 hygienists?
Oh gosh. If I had to guess, California?
Colorado.
What? So, what?
Colorado has the highest proportion, I mean, per number of hygienists and hygienist shifts works. Facebook groups, matching 1099 platforms. So there's no coincidence that is a state that almost got the dental assistants passed first. So when it's highly penetrated by 1099 marketplaces, Facebook groups are matching app, all these hygienists are working independent already.
Yeah.
And because they're already doing that, they're on their own. They're typically not promoting the hygiene association and the lobby and stuff like that. There are so many like hygiene influencers out there that may be promoting a 1099 app because maybe they got their hand out, okay, they're getting a little bit of money and it's creating work-life balance, but not realizing the counter effect that it's having, that you're all these other individuals think, oh, it's good. I look at it, it's good, but then they don't realize all the stuff that we talked about. So that's the thing.
That's so, this is what's so amazing about the state of Colorado. And I mean, I know you're a big friendly in Colorado. I love, so it's just going to be a big love fest for the hygienists in Colorado. I love, 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 love what they're doing in Colorado. So I got an email blaster from Colorado because I consider myself a Colorado hygienist. And if you ask any of them in Colorado, they will say Katrina Sanders is in fact a Colorado hygienist. So I'm on their newsletter list or whatever. They sent me this email that talked about the solution that they created. Because if the citation here, if the narrative is we don't have a workforce, which now we go back to, okay, they are the, you know, per capita, per hygienist, they are the highest 1099 rate. And you really look at it and you go, so how do you quantify what a full-time hygienist is? So where did these lobbyists capture this data to say, well, we don't have enough workforce, or we have a shortage of hygienists? Again, where does that come from? Where do you capture that data? So here's what they did. Instead of, you know, and they did fight, you know, they spent a lot of time and energy, like Montana did, you know, to say this is unsafe, it's not going to be in the best interest of the public, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And they went through all of that, of course. But what they did was they were actually very solution-based, which I absolutely love. And it just shows that is the energy of the hygienists in leadership in Colorado. So what they did was they partnered with the local dental hygiene schools and they said, okay, for example, I see that you graduate 16 students in a cohort. Do you have the availability to increase that to 30 if you needed to? Like, do you have enough chairs? Do you have enough faculty? Do you have enough resources to be able to do that? And the local dental hygiene school said, yeah, we could totally do that. So then they increased the number of students that they were bringing in. Then they go to the next hygiene program and so on. And so what they really did was they accumulated an incredible amount of dental hygiene students who in just a handful, you know, the next 18 months now at this point are going to be released into the workforce. They also are partnering to open up another dental hygiene school in Colorado. So they're creating solutions.
Better solution, right? What a better
amazing solution. Here's another thing they did too. They negotiated with their like state funding entity. So, you know, every state has like different, you know, Medicare, Medicaid funding that they do. So they started to negotiate the fees that were associated with these like Medicare, Medicaid programs in the state of Colorado. And they basically said, okay, so if the narrative here is I'm a dentist and I take all Medicare, Medicaid patients, and do you know how much that they pay for a pro fee or whatever? I can't afford to hire a hygienist. That's why I need an assistant, right? Oh, we love that narrative. How juicy is that? So what did the Colorado Hygiene Association do? They partnered alongside the Dental Association. So they were very crystal clear. We didn't do this on our own accord. We partnered, but they partnered with the Dental Association. They renegotiated what those fees looked like. They actually increased the fees. So they're actually quite commensurate with like what you would get if you were billing to a typical third party payer service. Like, do you love that power? Brilliant. Like, that is so amazing. Brilliant. And that I think changes the narrative, because then you're giving power back to the clinicians to say, this is what our profession is. This is what we're able to do. And this is what we can safely do for the community. That to me is power. And I know that you did a lot in partnering alongside the amazing peeps of Colorado to be able to create a lot of dialogue and support on the lobbying side. I mean, that's important, because that is now establishing the future of where that dental hygiene profession goes. Does it become obsolete or does it become powerful? Right?
I love what you said on that. I mean, at the end of the day, it kind of all work together, right?
Yeah.
Like, just work together to find in the best interest of the patient, you can kind of craft a solution. I didn't know they did all that stuff at the school level. You know, the economics of it. When you're talking to individuals about hygiene, if you had to say what is the rule of thumb of like a daily average of hygiene production, not to just focus on the economics of it, but give me a ballpark target that you'll hear as a goal for daily hygiene production.
I'm hearing around like 1500.
1500, right?
Yeah.
Pretty common. Is that what you think too, Elizabeth? Is that you hear that?
Yeah, Elizabeth, what do you think? Elizabeth's a podiatrist. She's like, I don't know. Okay, that's a lot of toenails. I don't know.
Okay. So
that sounds about right. Because what you would, I mean, most dental hygienists get what, an hour to see a patient, but I do know that hygienists are also restricted to now sometimes 30, 45 minutes, which I understand. So thinking about that, yeah, I would say 1500 to 2000 would be the goal.
So, okay. Then if you hear like all the dental consultants out there, right, that'll consult the dental practice, and they're going to say, hey, you really want to keep your total cost of labor. Sorry, I keep throwing these questions out there. I don't mean.
No, but, I like it. I like it. Oh,
this is good.
What do they say is like, hey, what is the target for a dental practice that's running efficiently? What is the target that they would want their cost of labor for the hygiene chair on that day to be?
Is it around 30%?
33%, a third.
Okay.
Wow.
So if it's 15, you're on point. So if it's $1,500,
a third we should of that. Be taking $5,000 or $500, $5,000
a day.
$500 a day. I added an extra zero. It's my new thing I'm doing. I'm trying it out just to see.
So the dental consultants out there, big hygiene consultants and all this kind of stuff, will preach that to private practices, to DSOs. Hey, if you're maintaining 33% of cost of labor to your production, you have a very good profitable hygiene department. Okay, yeah. So let's do the math. $50 an hour over 8 hours is $400. That's it.
So if you're making $1,500,
so the average
and no benefits. Yeah,
the average taxes on top of that's going to range about 10%. So $40. Now you're $440. You add cost of accrual of benefits. Benefits is going to run 5 to 7% of cost of labor. You can be within easily. Now you talk about how you just said in Arizona we passed Botox or whatever. Now if they're doing additional things and everybody's more aware of in tune because you're working together, you can easily mix in some other additional fees for providing good service for your patient and easily absorb any of that stuff.
Yeah, you're spot on.
So the economics of it doesn't make sense.
You're spot on. And this is, I think, part of the challenge too. And I'd love Elizabeth's thought on this as a podiatrist, because I really don't know how it works in the healthcare space, but production is a key driver in so much of what happens in the dental space. We're not a hospital system where we get like, you know, private investors. We don't have like, you know, Bill and Melinda Gates, like buying a wing of our blah or whatever, you know what I'm saying? Like, we don't have tax dollars coming in to pay for, you know, this thing, if this patient doesn't pay, like we don't have those things in the dental space in a typical private practice situation. On the DSO side, we may have like stakeholders or investors, and you know, that adds a little bit of a complicated layer and really drives or makes production even more important. But this is one piece that I hear quite a bit when I talk to doctors, and they'll say, you know, I mean, the rate of what some hygienists are asking for is really incredible. I was up in Washington State, and some of the rates that doctors are like, oh yeah, I one doctor was like, I pay my hygienist $100 an hour. And I'm just like, oh, you hiring? But I mean, really, when you think about it, first of all, I will tell you this, because I get a lot of doctors who say like, yeah, I can't afford $100 an hour hygienist. Well, here's the thing. When I don't quantify my production anymore, because I work in the surgical suite with our doctors. So it's a whole different animal altogether. But I will tell you, back in my glory days, when I was working in general, and I would identify perio cases, I would identify caries risk assessment cases, I would be talking about adult sealants, I'd be delivering those adult sealants, I'd be delivering fluoride treatments on my patients, I identified who was up to date or needed an FMX, a cone beam scan, and I was capturing those things. And you want to talk about 33% of my production, I guarantee rootin' tootin' darn to you that I was making at least $300 an hour for that practice. So there are, I do believe, $100+ an hour hygienists out there. And I do believe, you know, there's a provocative piece to this. Like, is it ethical to give a bonus structure to a healthcare provider who is partially responsible for capturing the you know, diagnosis and guiding the patient through the treatment plan that's needed. I do believe that is a huge ethical issue. Like when you start saying to the provider, like, you're going to make more money if you do more surgeries. That is concerning that to me. I've never been a huge fan of like, I get bonuses and things like that. I am a fan of, good job. That patient was a stage two perio case and you diagnosed it. You should get bonuses based on excellence in the amount of patients you heal. But like giving somebody a bonus based on the fact that their income is now going to be potentially upselling things, that makes me feel a little bit uncomfortable. Elizabeth, what do you see in the healthcare space when it comes to that, like, production, quantifying, building value around in your space?
Absolutely. So I actually think with comparing the medical space to dental, I would say that podiatry is probably one of the most similar. Currently, I work in a hospital system. So I'm, you know, given a certain salary, but we are a safety net hospital. So we do accept like Medicaid, Medicare. Sometimes we don't necessarily get reimbursed from the patients that we see and treat. But of course it is, you know, productivity is important, but volume is important. But in a private practice perspective, you're absolutely right. And there are different models. In some models, we're given kind of a set salary, but at the same time, we are given incentives for bonuses, right? Once I make over a certain amount of money, now I can bring home 25 to 30% of something that I bring beyond that.
Sure.
No, I mean, I think you're right. And I think, Katrina, you said, not to be provocative, but you said the same thing as doing it on production versus doing really great treatment for your patient.
Yeah. Yeah.
On the narrative and the optics of it, because this was from somebody that I met through Elijah. And I can't think of who it was on the individual, but he said, when you do good, you do good.
Yeah.
If you do really good,
the money comes if you do good. Yes, then, of course.
And so in that, if there's checks and balances to make sure that it's not like, you know, false representation of a procedure that's legitimate. And the way that people go to the dentist, everybody probably has a lot of those. So what you just described, I think if you said you did around $3,000, right? Or, you know, because if it's an average of $300 a patient, you saw 8 patients, you're talking $2,400. $2,400, a third of that is going to be $800. Well, an 8-hour day is $800. Mm-hmm. Very deserving of it, right?
Yeah.
Legitimate, good cases and all that. So the money is there to easily afford benefits.
Yeah.
There to easily afford increase of wages. But to your point, the way we talked about it earlier, is the clinician looking at it as a career or as a job? If it's looking at a career, they're so deeply passionate about it that they're going to do really good. And so the biggest cost comes from a practice losing that person because they are nickel and dime, or they don't, because you lose that person. Now every day that's open is going to cost you $15 and $1,500 in hygiene production on average.
Sure.
How much treatment gets scheduled out of that? If you schedule $3,000 out of that, now you're losing $4,500 a day because you didn't want to give them benefits or you didn't want to give them a couple extra days. So I think that's where this biggest opportunity is. But to your point, I mean, even Oregon was fighting last year in the legislation from dental assistants to hygienists. So that's a big push that's happening. And so when hygienists are not going through a system that's going to help support their hygiene association, the probability of their state being exposed to what happened in Colorado is pretty high.
I agree. And I think... what I appreciate about people like you, Joe, and the analytics that you're capturing and the advocacy that you're creating, because, you know, in the things that I know about OnDiem and the work that OnDiem is doing, you are really working to kind of like buckle those partnerships back up and say, okay, the dental association is saying this, the hygiene association is like, you're really creating and housing that conversation, which is a lot more than, you know, we're a staffing agency and this is what we do. Like there's, you're going the next level. You're going deeper into that, which is why we had to have you on for this conversation today. But one thing that you share that I think is so important, and this is where I think I just start to get very persnickety as a dental hygienist, is Is the value of what I bring based on the production that I'm bringing into the practice? Or is the value of what I bring the amount of health I bring to my patients, taking as many patients as possible to as close to 100% health as possible? And so one of the challenges that we run into is that, and you both obviously know my husband, Dale. Dale is big, like, analytics, finance, spreadsheets guy, which is why you and you two get along, Joe. He loves spreadsheets just as much as you do. But, you know, he's like, you can measure anything. He says, you can measure anything. Well, I think the problem, or one of the limitations that we're seeing in this career, job shortage, value of hygienists conversation in general, is that the value of a hygienist has been so deeply placed on the amount of production we bring in. And that's a challenge if you're a hygienist in a low socioeconomic status area where your, you know, billing rates are, you know, very augmented versus if you're a hygienist. When I worked in fee for service, when I worked for a high-end cosmetic doctor where everybody came in and they were paying $200 just for a pro fee, I mean, you could name your price. It didn't matter. And the population coming into, do you know how easy it was to produce like whatever in a day? That's easy. And I could just be a profi princess and do that all day. Meanwhile, my colleague down the street is pit stains doing scaling and root planing on every single patient, but Medicare, Medicaid isn't going to reimburse for it. So mm-hmm. they have to bill it as a 4355 full mouth debridement because they don't know what else to do. So they're getting paid garbagey for it, but they're doing so much to move those patients as close to 100% health as possible. So the challenge, I think, for hygienists who truly take their profession seriously is that, yes, there is a production value. I've got to keep air conditioning going. My dogs eat a very expensive, bougie diet. They eat better than I did when I was in college. So yes, I need to be bringing money in for that. I don't mean to say that this isn't about money. This, you know, there's a reason why we show up at, you know, wake up at 5 a.m, put on our scrubs, show up for a 7 a.m. patient. You know, I get it. But I think there's more to it. When we talk about the profession of dental hygiene, we're also talking about the fact that there's more to the metric of who I am and what I bring to a practice beyond how many sealants did you sell today? And that's where I think we have an opportunity to augment or change as we talk about appreciating hygienists, maybe considering that there are other ways that we can measure what that excellence looks like. And again, partnering alongside organizations like OnDiem, the things that you're doing, Joe, it really helps pour into that conversation in such a deeper way. Instead of an us versus them, it's a, hey, we want to be taken seriously and we want to be a critical contributor to the overall health, wellness, and vitality of our patients. A reasonable doctor practice owner is going to go, yes, absolutely, please come on board. Because I'll tell you, when I get into a practice where I'm working with a doctor who does appreciate that, they're like, Katrina, do whatever you want. You know, when I start diagnosing patients the way they need to be diagnosed and patients are saying yes and they're accepting treatment and we're moving forward, the doctor is more on board with purchasing the equipment that's needed, et cetera. It's leveling up the profession by leveling up the caliber of the conversation and the mindset around that conversation. To your point, Joe, when we stay in that limited mindset of, well, I'm not going to empower myself with the knowledge to protect myself, and I'm just going to take this job because it's going to pay me whatever. I don't care that it's a 1099, like whatever. I just need the shift, you know? Or who cares if I have healthcare benefit? My husband gets healthcare benefits. What are we really doing to advocate for the future of our profession?
Oof, I got some thoughts. Okay. So, so well said, right? I think go back to that same comment, right? You do good. Because the practices on DM, they're our customers. So the practices are our customers. So real quick, on DM, what we built is really software that facilitates the HR compliance. Clinicians can work at practice every day, 2 days a week through that they normally work at directly. And then they can work 2 days a week through us if they want. They can work wherever they want, where they have an existing job and just use us 1 day a month or 1 day a week to supplement. A lot of people will work for us 2 days a week in the same practice over and over and over, because then they get continuity care. And the way our pricing model is so competitive, it's actually sometimes less than if they'll practice hire them directly. Okay, so within all of that, the difference that I will say between a hygiene profession and other medical professions, sometimes as nurses or whatever it may be, is dental practices are small businesses. Mm-hmm. They're independent practices. They're not nonprofits. So if you just took, like, I was thinking in my head, not to always be like Dale and I thinking of the analytics or the stats, right? But you talked about the fee for service for the $200 pro fee versus the individual that's in the with the Medicaid low reimbursement, right? Even in that practice, I'm sure that practice is not a nonprofit. It's a for-profit practice with a different customer base, right?
That's right.
So they have different unit economics on what they can't afford and can't pay. Just they're just limited based on what they can produce.
Yeah.
So if you had to dissect, if there's 1,000 practices in Arizona, how many are nonprofits? Is it 100? Okay, so 10%, I'm just guessing. So 10% of the practices are nonprofit. They're going to have a different economics that they're going to be able to pay. So as a hygienist, you have to know that, okay, the work that I'm going in here is more, it's more about what I'm serving these underserved communities. So yeah. I'm not going to get paid as much. I'm still going to be working hard, but maybe the value that I'm giving back is more my motivation than the dollars I'm putting in my bank account. So it's just a realization of that. And in the for-profit businesses, if they do what you just said, if there's good cohesiveness between the office manager, the doctor, the team, this is what makes me valued for my career. This is what I love to do. I love to do diagnosed legit treatment. I love to be able to be part of the team where I can help you to do that, doctor, because it makes me feel like a medical professional. And yes, if we're doing really great and we're billing more, I want a little slice of that because you're getting the best of both worlds. So it's all kind of the narrative on how you share that.
Yeah.
I love the motto of your business, that you're taking care of the people who take care of people, right? It's just such an interesting motto. And you're an entrepreneur. You started the business. What got you into starting a business like this?
Actually, it's all the stuff we just talked about. So I was part of two other startups. I wasn't the founder of those startups, but the founder of this. What I was going to do was mobile dental clinics. We had a company that had 500 employees. We had about a 3% adoption rate where we paid for the dental insurance for our employees. But they weren't going. They weren't going because they were hourly workers. It was a manufacturing facility. They're hourly, you know, with assembly lines and everything else. Mm-hmm. They needed every hour of every pay. So, or every pay of every hour, I should say. And so what happened is if they chose to go to the dentist, they may take 4 hours off or they may take a day off. That would be the limiting step for them to maybe not get the 40 hours to then get an overtime. We ran swing shift and weekend shifts every week. So they made their money on overtime a lot of the times. So they couldn't afford to go to the dentist. And I was like, wait a minute, that's messed up. But one of my best friends is a dentist. And I said, you know what? It's a shame that people are choosing to not go get oral health, go to the dentist, because they either don't have transportation or they have time in the day. So next thing I know, I got on this quest. I was figuring out how to build mobile dental clinics and go direct, cut out insurance and go direct to the large employers. Within a short amount of time, I had verbal agreements. I'm in Portland with Nike, Columbia Sportswear, Freightliner, these other large organizations to be able to roll up with a mobile clinic because they didn't want their team members. They wanted to offer better service to them for easy access to care. So in order to do that business, I had to learn about the financials of a dental practice. So I had to see how many operatories, 4 or 5, could fit in a big mobile clinic. I was actually at USC when they were launching their mobile clinic truck to these underserved communities to look at how much they were and what they looked like and the throughput. So I had to learn the economics, like what does a hygienist produce each day? What does a doc produce every day? And I was like, oh, okay, these are really strong financials. They're, you know, high gross margins, based on billings. And in that, I was like, okay, this is what I'm going to launch. And I was going to build an app, easy, like Open Table, easy schedule for the employees and for them to schedule. Billings would be easy, be integrated billing to the payers or actually through the employers. So that was my thesis. But before I was going to raise capital, I went to local dental practices of the buddies that I knew that ran dental offices. And I said, hey, I want to look at your hygiene production every single day. And what's your doc production? What's scheduled from the hygiene chair out of that? I was off completely. It was like an EKG of every week. And I go, hey, why are you so low in your hygiene billings this day on this Thursday or this Friday or whatever it was compared to the previous days? Oh, we only have one hygienist that day versus two. Well, why not the second one? Oh, well, if it's the second one, she would get into 40 hours. And then if I give her benefits, then everyone else is going to ask for benefits too. So I only let her work 3 days or only her 2 days. Over and over, week after week, multiple different practices, the same story. And I was like, wait a minute. She's producing for you 70 to 80 grand a month in production. She's generating, she's scheduling out of that the production you do, and you're nickel and diming her over $240 of care benefits a month. Are you kidding me? So I said, okay, this is a problem in dentistry. It's a problem for all these dental practices. Mm-hmm. I just mentioned how none of them have HR. They don't have payrolls done by the local CPA that doesn't really know the laws of dentistry. You have all of these hygienists looking to sell, you know, multi-level marketing stuff or other stuff to supplement their income on their off days.
Mm-hmm.
Practices need more hygienists because they want to provide more access to care to their patients. Traditional staffing agencies market up 50%. That's not a sustainable labor cost to be able to do it. Like consistency to have the same clinician in over and over so they have continuity of care. It's illegal to pay them as 1099 just to match them. So if we could build a W-2 HR fintech marketplace for dentists, we could help both sides. So that's what we did. I pivoted and we started on Deal.
Dang. Isn't that an amazing? I love the origin story. Isn't that incredible?
My hair wasn't gray.
Oh, he was young. He was not gray. But I mean, what an amazing thing. You see the opportunity and you built this because there needed to be a solution. You saw the opportunity that doctors were not delivering the level of care that was fully needed to their patients. That's what happens when you see that EKG in production. I will absolutely admit that all day long. You have an opportunity, you have an empty chair with the lights turned off for certain days because you're afraid to pay that clinician the healthcare benefits that a healthcare provider should have. And so you've created this solution that is lifting the way hygienists are seeing themselves inside of their profession, and you're creating a very safe space for practice owners and hygiene clinicians or on DM clinicians. These are assistants. You see the whole gamut, doctors as well, you know, as potential associates, things like that. You're creating this really safe environment for people to be able to come together, protect themselves, have the assets that they need to protect themselves and their families. I mean, you do PTO, you've got like amazing support with, local components and the state components where, you know, you're helping out so much and trying to normalize, this is how you treat a professional so that then when a professional shows up, they feel as though they're truly being appreciated inside of that. And that shows up on the day that they're delivering that care, whether that happens to be, I'm here to step in for a hygienist who happens to be out for the day. That also continues when that, you know, hygienist who temped for that one day goes to complete their tax audit in April, that they truly feel as though they are, because they are, a critical aspect of our profession. And that I think is such a beautiful way to honor and appreciate our hygienists. So thank you so much, Joe Fogg of On Diem, for sharing your amazing wisdom, the origin behind, and the reason why On Diem does what it does for so many incredible professionals and dental organizations. The amount of work that you do tirelessly is truly awe-inspiring. And so it's just such an honor to have had you on today. For anybody who's interested in learning more about On Diem, setting up a profile, learning about picking up a few extra bucks around the holidays because they're coming up, please check out our show notes. We will have a clickable link there for you to start interacting with the amazing On Diem platform. You can see that W-2 compliant platform working gorgeously. I have an incredible pleasure of meeting with your developers all the time, and they are some of the coolest people I know, which is a hard thing to say about web developers, by the way, but they are really amazing people. Like, I love them as humans. So really incredible. And if you see On Diem, you know, having a booth at a show, a conference, go over, hug them, say hello, because Joe is an attractant of some of the most amazing human beings that you will get to meet. So go over and say hi to them and tell them that you heard Joe on the podcast and that the Sanders sisters say hello. With that, thank you so much for joining us today. Thank you for joining the Sanders sisters for another scintillating episode of Floss and Flip Flops. Please join us next month as we continue the conversation talking all things oral systemic. We promise to continue to help you brush up on these diseases.
We promise to keep you on your toes.
Cheers.
Thank you for joining us for another monthly episode of Floss and Flip Flops with the Sanders Sisters.
Thank you for being part of the change we need to see in the medical and dental professions.
Join us next month for another sister-to-sister chat about other unique, interesting, and perhaps provocative and disruptive health topics.
Don't forget to like and subscribe, and maybe even leave a fabulous review.
And we'll catch you next month for another episode of
Floss and Flip Flops
with the Sanders Sisters.
I love you, Kinka.
I love you, Izzy.